So, after working very hard on brains and formal theory this morning, we now have to work hard on some phenomenological topics, which hopefully will also be of interest. What I'm going to talk about is... Already it's not working. Okay. So the subject of this talk is TEV strings and collider probes of large extra dimensions. And here, I would say this, I could say this is work that I've done with, but what I should really say is I'm representing the work of my students Skylar Cullen and Maxime Perlstein. And we've been pursuing another approach to the essentially experiments that would probe large extra dimensions, which I'll now describe. So we're going to start from the scenario of Arkani Hamed, Demopoulos, and Diwali. And we're, for all of this talk, I'm going to really do what they had suggested in the most simple way. I consider a world with n extra dimensions. I will assume that they are flat and periodic with size 2 pi r. We will put a three brain in that structure, and we'll put all of the standard model fields on that three brain. The quantum gravity scale is then given by some formula like this, and as the authors at the top of the slide showed, when you take the fundamental gravity scale to be of order TeV, you find that R is very large, but otherwise everything is consistent, and one can really ask whether this scenario is realized experimentally. So now you have a program of experiments which would you could do to find out whether these ideas are correct. And the standard picture of these experiments, Jim Wells described to us a couple days ago, and already there's a question. No. I'm going to go off in a completely different direction, as you'll see. But no, I'm not going to stabilize the extra dimensions. So the standard probes of this scenario, as Jim Wells described to us in his talk a few days ago, are looking for missing energy, where you have some standard model reaction which radiates a graviton out into the extra dimensions, which becomes large enough to observe because it occurs at an energy near the fundamental gravitational scale. Or the search for contact interactions, as suggested by these authors and then many other papers following, where you look at some graviton intermediate state which occurs in a process like fermion-fermion scattering that you would observe at a high-energy collider. Because we'll talk a little about this, I need to introduce some notation for it. The amplitude for this process computed in field theory involves this formally divergent integral. Hewitt suggested, and other people suggested different parameterizations, but I'll follow Hewitt in using this parameterization for the effect, just a dimension 8 contact interaction proportional to the square of the energy momentum tensor. Hewitt called this coefficient M sub S, but that's the string scale, and to distinguish them, I'm going to call this M sub H. Okay. So, in Jim's talk, he described all the ongoing and future experiments that probe these two sources of information about new extra dimensions. But it seems to us that if the quantum gravity scale is low, and if the quantum gravity theory is string theory, then there's something missing which one ought to add to this picture. And so let me now put that here. If the quantum gravity scale is low, then the actual theory of quantum gravity might also be important to these considerations. And in particular, as a toy model, we might consider weakly coupled string theory as the theory of quantum gravity and ask how that fits into this picture. And the answer is that it changes it rather dramatically, because if quantum gravity is explained by string theory, that means that all of the standard model particles are actually strings. They have structure, they have form factors that come from string theory, and you have those effects which you add to the other effects of large extra dimensions. And in fact, if you ask which effects are the most important, if you were to ask a string theorist, that person would probably
put the hierarchy in this way, at least according to the weak coupling version of the model. The coupling constants that we'll deal with, by the way, are the standard model couplings at TeV energy. So indeed, we're working in a weakly coupled theory in that framework. So what that person would say is that fermion-fermion scattering is actually the leading effect. That's order G squared. By the way, my G is the G Young Mills, which, I've written that incorrectly, is proportional to the square root of the G that appears in Joe's book. But this is the G that phenomenologists use. The leading effects would be fermion-fermion scattering, which have some Young-Mills value, and then they're modified by corrections which are proportional to ST and U times alpha prime. Then, in one higher order in G, you would find the disk amplitude, which is proportional to G times kappa, or G cubed. And then, in a still higher order, you would find the graviton intermediate states as a piece of the cylinder diagram, which would now be of order G to the fourth. And so what I want to do is just take this very simple point of view and explore it and see what it tells experimentalists to look for. In particular, in this picture, the most important new physics effects of extra dimensions come from this diagram, that is, from string theory. And what we should be concerned with is actually seeing string theory in standard model reactions. So I want to just make the simplest toy model, push it through, and see what the phenomenology looks like. I should point out some related work. Some of the things that appear at the end of the talk have actually already been published by someone else, by Mr. Dudas and Murad in a recent preprint. And finally, many of the formulae that appear in this talk appeared in earlier work by Bars and Hinchliff with the title Effects of Quark Compositeness at the Superconducting Supercollider. Please note the date, 1985. So I take this as an indication that really good theoretical ideas can't be held back by fashion, at least not forever. Of course, you may draw another conclusion, but I encourage you not to. Okay. So here's the toy model in which I just like to do some simple computations. We'll have a pair of D-brains, n equals 4 supersymmetry, that has a U2 gauge symmetry with this content on the brain. Let me now do an appropriate orbifold projection to reduce the content of that theory to the following. I want to keep in the massless sector only the 3 A boson, the gluino G I equals 1, A equals minus 1, and the gluino I equals 1, A equals plus 1. And I'll give those things the interpretation of the photon, the left-handed electron, and the left-handed positron. And of course, I also have the U1 gauge boson, but that decouples at low energy. This is a consistent truncation of the theory in the sense that if I look at the tree-level diagrams, scattering diagrams for those particles, the only massless states are the same set of particles. So I'm doing something consistent here. Now, what's interesting is that you can compute the tree amplitudes of these diagrams by noting that they're exactly those of the original n equals 4 Young-Mills theory. That's just the inheritance property of the orbifolding that we're doing. And actually, there's another property that all the needed amplitudes can be, once you take this into account, can be computed if you have the string amplitudes for gauge bosons, and then you use the n equals 1 Suzy Ward identities. So if you interpret the states of the standard model as at least the untwisted states of an orbifold, then there's a very high degree of model independence in the formulae that I'll describe. So now let me just put some other things that we'll need, coupling constant relations. Again, the G that appears will be G Young-Mills. In this model, that's equal to E, the electric charge in this string QED. This is my definition of the fundamental gravitational scale. And if you push it through the string theory and relate that to alpha prime will be, MS will be defined as 1 over the square root of alpha prime. You find this relation, alpha to the minus 1 quarter. But now we can this relation is actually interesting. This factor is very close to 1, but for realistic coupling constants, there's some distance between these ratios. And if you just take this toy model formula very straightforwardly and just plunk in the numbers, you find that the string scale is a factor of 3 below the fundamental gravitational scale defined in this way, if you take G equals the electric charge, and a factor of 2 if you take G to be the charge of the QCD strong interactions. So before you see the effects of this, you'll see the effects of this. That's a very simple statement, but it has some interesting consequences. Now, it would be nice, of course it's a requirement for any realistic string theory, that the string theory should give all of the standard model couplings, not just each one individually. And for that, what you need is to have a mechanism to have a unified coupling in the string theory, and then have the coupling split from one another for the different standard model gauge groups, SU3, SU2, and U1. So typically, you want to couple some modulus to the F mu nu squared term with a different coefficient for each gauge group. And there are some models recently proposed which have that feature, but I'm going to ignore that subtlety here. We'll deal with the standard model interactions one at a time in this lecture, so please excuse me. Again, it's just a toy model. Okay, well now we have to compute tree amplitudes, and I guess everyone who's hung around Joe long enough knows how to do that by now. There's a formula which has an ordered amplitude and Chan-Payton factors. The non-zero ordered amplitudes, actually I've written them all here for massless four-body scattering. They're all interconnected by supersymmetry Ward identities. And then these are the field theory amplitudes, and then you multiply them by the Veneziano amplitude to get the string theory amplitudes. This is a very familiar expression in 10-dimensional open string theory, and these guys showed that the same thing holds if you have open strings attached to a D-brain. So now we're all set. I've defined for you string QED. There's a precise set of rules for computing things. So we just take the things on this slide, we shuffle them and deal them out, and see what it predicts. And so here are a couple formulae, and from this I'll draw the necessary morals. That, for example, Baba scattering in this particular helicity channel is modified just by the addition of some Veneziano-type amplitude. For two-photon production, the formula is a little more complicated, but again, it's derivable by the rules on the previous slide. In general, what you find is that there's a modification of the standard model scattering amplitudes by just this factor, which is to say a modification in order S over the string scale squared, and string resonances, which come from the poles of the gamma function, string resonances in the on a Reggie trajectory, so at masses corresponding to the square root of n times the string scale. So what I'd like to do is to talk about the consequences of these in turn. Now, to discuss the effects of string interactions, a very nice place to look is Baba scattering. Baba scattering is a little more complicated than the model I'm discussing here because it not only has the photon, but it has the Z boson. The attitude I'm going to take is that all of the ordered amplitudes necessarily have their poles in the S and the T channel, unless you postulate that there's some electron number plus 2 string. So what I'm going to do is ignore in this form factor the Z mass and just take the usual expression for Baba scattering and multiply it by this set of gamma functions. So that's a very simple thing to do, but it's interesting to see what its consequences are. So here's the tree-level formula for Baba scattering, and then what I'm going to do is to take the individual helicity amplitudes, multiply them by that ratio of gamma functions. If you expand it out, the first thing you find is this structure, which corresponds to some dimension 8 contact interaction. Now, on this slide, I've given just for comparison the things that one now in the literature fits Baba scattering to. So, for example, in the approach where you say the new physics effects come from Kaluza-Klein graviton exchange with the energy momentum tensor squared, you would take this amplitude and add this term, which again has this MH parametrizing the scale. If you do something that Eichten et al. Said a long time ago was the right way to look for quark or lepton compositeness, you would add a dimension 6 operator, which gives this term. And so now what we can do is to basically just see what this looks like in relation to the data. So it's kind of amusing. Each of these formulae is a different parametrization. And so if you see agreement of the data with the standard model, the best you can do is get a bound on these three parameters. Those bounds reflect this parametrization, but then you can try and infer different things depending upon what you think the new physics is. So let me first just talk about what those bounds are in present and future experiments. There's now a very large data set on fermion-fermion scattering at high energy at LEP2. This is a little piece of it, which is actually published, which is to say submitted to HEPEX. The L3 data on BAVA scattering at 183 GeV. The histogram is the standard model expectation. The data points are the measurement. One can take this, and I thank Mr. Bulatov in the L3 collaboration for some help with this. Low statistics. The cross sections are small at LEP2. I'm sorry. If you combine all of the data at all energies, you'll do, I think, about a factor of 5 better in statistics. No, it's a factor of something like 3 times 4 better in statistics than what's given here. Sorry? Ooh, frankly, I don't know. Okay. So if you take this data and fit it to these various hypotheses, these curves show what the sort of the 95% confidence exclusion limits in the sense that Jim described would be. The green curves refer to the different hypotheses. So the black is string theory. The red is Kaluza-Klein-Graviton exchange. And blue and green are two of these Eichten et al. Compositeness parametrizations. The numbers associated with those I've written on this slide. Really, they're just for reference, because these numbers aren't comparable. They correspond to different hypotheses. Nevertheless, this one is quite interesting. It says that the string scale is greater than 400 GeV, and if you use the conversion factor that I wrote down on a previous slide, that tells you that the quantum gravity scale is greater than 1200 GeV, which is actually stronger than any of the bounds that we've heard so far at this conference. If you ask how well you can do in the future, you can do the same exercise for a TeV linear collider, assuming that no signal is observed, and the various curves look like this. So again, strings, Kaluza-Klein-Gravitons, vector and axial vector contact interactions a la Eichten et al. And the numbers are given here. So it's known from Tom Ritzo's and Joanne's work that one can get a very good bound on the scale MH. But it's interesting that in string theory, one also gets a very strong bound on the string and quantum gravity scales. The other thing that I'd like you to notice from this slide is that if you saw an effect, these curves are distinguishable. They really have different forms. And so if you saw the effect and you could improve your statistics, you could actually get evidence about which scenario you were in. Sorry? Well, it depends what the M is, of course. So the bounds correspond to basically a year at 10 to the 34th at 1 TeV. Yes. Well, first of all, they're completely different because the string theory comes in effectively as a dimension 8 operator, whereas the contact interactions, you put the most arbitrary operators. That's what we said to do a long time ago. And the first operators begin in dimension 6. But string theory, at least in this toy model, begins in dimension 8. Okay. That's a good question, and I must say, sorry? I must say that I don't know the reason for that, but it's true. It's true in this model. Okay. And once again, here are the sort of numbers we were talking about. Oh, now, of course, the other thing about string theory is that there are resonances. And I'll discuss that a little, but maybe I should show this plot first. If you actually got up into the resonance region, the Veneziano amplitude has very amazing and characteristic predictions. One learns about these predictions in the first chapter of any review on string theory that was written prior to 1984. But in any case, they're given here. The black curve is the d sigma d cosine theta for Bava scattering in the standard model. I've assumed here that the string scale is 500 GeV. I'm going to tell you in a minute that that's ruled out, but let's have fun for a moment. The green are the two examples of energy. So the numbers are the center of mass energy of any plus E minus collider. The green are below the first resonance, so then this will go off to infinity. The red are between the first and second resonance. There's this characteristic feature that the cross sections always have a zero in cosine theta. The blue is above the second resonance and below the third resonance, so now you have two zeros in cosine theta. And eventually what you get is a forward peak characteristic of what people used to call diffraction, an amplitude which is very small in the intermediate region, and a backward peak which goes away surprisingly slowly. So this kind of phenomenology is quite characteristic of strings or an organized series of resonances, you could say. In strings, this vanishing happens quite naturally. It's the softness of the scattering interaction. Okay. Well, now let's talk a little more about the resonances. So, once again, toy model, we're just doing the simplest thing. Let's open up these gamma functions at the first resonance. There's some structure like that. Take the amplitudes on the previous slide, go to the first resonance, and you find these resonant expressions. Here I've defined some polarization vectors, and we can try and factorize these expressions and find out what's there. And then using those polarization vectors, you can rewrite these three amplitudes in the form that I've written here. So one sees that there is a spin 2 and a spin 1 resonance at this level, both of which are accessible in this scattering channel. The coefficients of the spin 2 have the right relation that the expression factorizes. Of course, we knew that that had to be true because that's how string theory works. And also with electrons, you can get into a spin 1 resonance, which has a somewhat larger coupling constant. I've just written here the widths of these resonances, and of course, that's the essential information you need to compute their production cross-section. Now, of course, the best place to look for resonances, though, is not in E plus E minus, but it's in QQ bar. In QQ bar, one has, at the Tevatron, much higher energies. And what we would really like to do is to apply this analysis to quark-antiquark scattering. So you do put together PP bar at the Tevatron. You look for jets at very high mass. And in particular, in this model, you expect that the first Regi excitation of the gluon would be a color octet resonance decaying into two jets. It should be a signal that one really couldn't miss at the Tevatron. So let's look at the data. Well, that's always depressing, but here's what it looks like. Those who know a little about this data know that there is disagreement about the normalization of the data at very large mass. Probably there's more than a 20% overall systematic normalization error at the highest masses. However, experimentalists also know that it's much easier to look for a bump on a spectrum than to find the normalization of a smooth curve. And so there are very strong constraints on the non-existence of bumps in the tail of the spectrum. And CDF has presented the following limits. Okay, well, we have to figure out where string theory is on that curve. But as you see, some of these colored particles are very strongly bounded, almost to a TeV in mass. Okay, so let's now do that exercise. It's quite straightforward. We need to know, however, what string QCD is. And unfortunately, we don't have such a neat and consistent model of string QCD, but we can hack it up in the following way. Let's take a U4 D-brain setup, project onto this set of states, which is a consistent truncation of the theory, SU3, a quark, an anti-quark, and then also this U1 generator will couple to this quark and anti-quark. And unless you do something much more sophisticated, there's no way to get rid of it. So let's just proceed. If you compute quark-anti-quark scattering into quark-anti-quark, there's one color order and amplitude that contributes. Here's the Chan-Peyton factor. You can evaluate it. You can divide it into a color octet in the S channel and a color singlet in the S channel. The 2/3 is actually the square of the quark coupling to this boson. So everything's working out right. It's just it's the wrong model. But nevertheless, you could take as a model, just extract the color octet part and study the resonance for that particle. And if you just factorize it as before, you can compute the amplitudes for this, the spin 1 and spin 2 excited gluons to decay to QQ bar, and you can get the total resonance production rate. Now, it's interesting to just compare that to something which has already been studied in the literature. The relevant thing is something called the flavor universal coloron, which was proposed by Chivukula, Cohen, and Simmons for reasons that probably would not interest anyone in the audience. But nevertheless, that object has a production cross-section which is exactly the same as this formula. And fortunately enough, it appears on this slide as the outlying limit, which is found by CDF. And so what we find then is a limit on the string scale, which is really amazingly close to a TeV, or a limit on the low quantum gravity scale, if you accept my scaling and now use alpha S in that relation, of 1.7 TeV. And except for the supernova constraint, which is special for n equals 2, this is, I believe, the most stringent direct limit on large extra dimensions. It's quite a stringent limit, but maybe one should look at it optimistically, that the corresponding reach of the LHC is up to 6 TeV in MS. So we'll really get into the region where one would expect to find string theory if Savas and his colleagues are correct. Okay. Well, now I have about 10 minutes left, and that's just enough time to clean up two other aspects of this program. So far, you remember I had put three different kinds of processes on that original slide, and I've spent all this time talking about only the first one. So I should now talk about the others a little more quickly. So first of all, missing energy processes. In field theory, one can get relations like this. So you look at Kaluza-Klein excitations of the graviton. Let's think about the one with mass m. Then there's a formula like this for producing it in E plus E minus. In string theory, you can recover these formulae by computing the disk amplitude, that is three open string vertex operators on the edges, and a graviton vertex operator in the middle. That's a somewhat tedious computation, but my colleagues are very strong. And so one can arrive at this formula times this expression, which now has basically resonances and form factors in all of the relevant channels in this model. And maybe I should say the same formula for glue-glue goes to glue-graviton was presented by Dudas and Morad. This formula is interesting because it provides a form factor which in some regions is actually a suppression of KK graviton exchange. And if you just work out, for example, the simplest limit is to take T and U equal to 0, set S equal to M squared, and take that to be very far above the string scale, then you find a form factor suppression that looks like this. There's a paper in the literature by Bondo, Kugo, and collaborators where they said that such a form factor was necessary, they said, to regularize the one graviton exchange contribution. They got it from considerations of brain recoil, and they proposed this formula. Now, that formula is actually correct for the physics that they discussed, but please notice that it has this exponent times a factor of alpha, where alpha is not alpha prime, it's the square of the coupling constant. So the form factor that comes from brain recoil is definitely there, but it's parametrically weaker than this one, and the physical origin of this form factor is the floppiness, the extendedness of the states, which are actually having a hard collision to produce the graviton. Well, one last note about missing energy. Sava showed you a table of missing energy constraints. I won't say who the authors of that table are, but it was sadly out of date. And here's a more contemporary version of that table. I put supernova 1987A there because it really belongs on this table. That constraint is independent of any cosmological scenario. It's incredibly strong for two extra dimensions. It goes to pot when the number of extra dimensions becomes large. These are the present accelerator constraints on the quantum gravity scale for missing energy. These have been published, essentially, these are from Aleph, but it's basically the same numbers from all of the LEP collaborations. The CDF hasn't published these numbers, but they presented a constraint on missing energy at SUSY 99, I guess Joe referred to it, and we processed that into these numbers. 95% confidence exclusion. Finally, for future accelerator constraints, what's there for the linear collider is what was in Savas's table before. What's there for the LHC is much larger, and that's because Jim Wells and collaborators realized, but we didn't when we made the first version of this table, that if you make a very hard cut on missing transverse energy, you get a much better constraint. Jim also commented that these numbers are very much affected by the physics of graviton production at high energy. And what we found in experimenting with the form factor I've showed you on the previous slide is that actually the biggest effect is that you produce much larger rates, in fact, very much larger rates, due to the appearance of these same kind of resonances that I was talking about before. In particular, quark gluon going to a regi-excited quark state, decaying back into quark graviton. And you saw the poles in the form factor that I just presented. Finally, where does the Kaluza-Klein graviton exchange fit into this picture? Well, we'd like to study this using the example of gamma-gamma goes to gamma-gamma. Actually, several authors, and in particular Mr. Chung and Davoud Yazil, suggested that this would be a very nice process because in the standard model, it doesn't have a tree-level contribution. So graviton exchange only has to compete with loops. And in fact, using this effect of Lagrangian, you get some expressions. This amplitude is proportional to S squared. This one is proportional to U squared. And then you can try to add that to known one-loop contributions. And in fact, what these people claimed is that you get very good limits in future experiments on the parameter that's given here. In principle, we should try and compute those loops in string theory. But before we do that, it's interesting to note that string QED actually gives a tree-level contribution. Here's the expression in the model. If you remember that S plus T plus U equals 0, you can see that this expression vanishes only at the leading order in ST and U over MS squared. And at the next order, it gives an expression which basically has exactly the same form as this one. And that has to be true because there's only one possible dimension 8 operator that contributes. So everything in their papers was right in string theory with the translation of MH into MS, which is given on this slide. However, in order to figure out what the that still doesn't answer the question of where the Kaluza-Klein gravitons are. For that, you have to do some more detailed analysis, which, however, is very familiar to those of you who've done some practical computations in string theory. And I'll just present a few slides to show you that we've thought about this. Graviton exchange has been known since Lovelace to be part of the non-planar loop amplitude. By the way, a similar analysis appears in the paper of Dudas and Morad. Graviton exchange is in the non-planar loop amplitude. Essentially, when you take that guy, write it as a cylinder like this, and consider a very long cylinder, the gravitons propagate down this channel. To find the gravitons, you need to look in these sectors. And so let me just show you a few pieces of that computation. By the way, we're going to cheat. Everything else has been done in some orbifold of the D-brain. But in this one, for simplicity, we'll compute it just in the original n equals 4 supersymmetric model. However, that's OK, because the scalars in that model, coupled with the trace of the energy-momentum tensor, which vanishes for the two-photon intermediate state, it's still true that only the graviton propagates in this channel. So we set up the computation like this. We study the limit t goes to 0, which corresponds to light closed string states. If you take the t goes to 0 limit of the integrand, you find an expression like this, integrated over t and integrated over the positions of vertex operators on the boundary. The interesting part of this is the term here, t to the 9 minus p over 2. That you can rewrite as an integral over m of an exponent. And then you can recombine it now of performing the integral over t. Ooh, I should have put that integral over m. Oh, yes, that's fine. It's correct. I'm just going too fast. If you plug this expression into here and perform the integral over t, you arrive at this expression. So what you find is indeed the graviton propagator integrated over the mass or the transverse momentum perpendicular to the brain. There is some suppression factor which has to do with the fact that we're only looking at the small t part of the integral, which goes from t equals 0 to t equals infinity. And maybe I should say that the part of the region that we're excluding, the part which is t greater than t0 or v less than v0, has really a completely different interpretation. That's the diagrams that look like this, where gauge bosons float around the loop and give the one-loop contributions to gamma-gamma scattering. So now one can just sort of finish this off. Let me specialize to the case of a three-brain. One finds at the end of the day for this small t part of the integral an expression that looks like that. And finally, we can identify 1 over mh to the fourth as this expression. As promised, this contribution is finite and subdominant. And so basically what it says is that the most important physics is the stuff that I took care of in the first half hour of this lecture. OK, well, that's basically what I wanted to tell you. And let me just put up a slide of conclusions. In models of large extra dimensions in which quantum gravity is described by string theory, number one, the dominant new physics effects actually come not from model-independent gravitational effects, but from string theory. And one really ought to be aware of that. To study this, you look for string resonances and characteristic form factor corrections to standard model two-body reactions. Many of these reactions are already measured very accurately, and so that gives us constraints on string theory. And from the search for the string Regi excitations as resonances, we already know experimentally that the string scale is above 1 TeV, but the LHC has sensitivity much further than that, corresponding to MS of order 6 TeV or M of order 10 TeV. And so from this last statement and the faith that we have that Savas is, of course, correct experimentally, the LHC and linear collider era will be the era of experimental string physics. So thank you very much. Oh, yes, of course, if you resonate. But I showed you explicitly that there's actually a degenerate spin 1 and spin 2 resonance. In principle, higher order corrections would split them by a little. So it's quite an interesting structure with a spin 1 and then a spin 2 angular distribution. You'd be hard-pressed to make a model that could knock that up. Please. It basically, well, maybe I should say everything I've talked about in this talk has to do with a weak coupling treatment of the D-brain. But in that context, it just follows from the scaling, which is on this slide, that that this thing comes in order G squared, this is in order G cubed, so these processes are always suppressed with respect to that one. And that's exactly the statement that the quantum gravity scale is higher than the string scale. Okay. If you want to go to strong coupling, then you have to explain why the standard model is strongly coupled when it looks weakly coupled. So I think that's harder than just accepting this. Itzhak, please. Actually, that's interesting because, of course, historically, there was a long controversy about whether string theory described the real strong interaction, the QCD strong interaction. And I think that wasn't resolved until people got well beyond the string scale or the QCD scale and found hard point-like structures. So, I hope that in 10 years we can come back here and confront this problem. Okay.